It's time for episode 553 of the Clockwise podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes. Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast where we don't have parsley, sage, or this week, rosemary, but we do have time. My name is Dan Morin, and I'm joined across the internet by my good friend, my pal, my co-host, the one and only Micah Sargent. How are you doing today, Micah?
I'm doing well, Dan. I started to read the intro earlier this morning, and then I was like, oh, I got it. It's funny. But I didn't see the part about rosemary. That was very good. I love it.
For those who don't know, Rosemary Orchard sat in last week for Micah. So there's the I'm going to explain my joke and thus make it completely unfunny now. So we're right on track for Clockwise. Well, this is, of course, the show where we invite on two fantastic and smart people to talk about four tech topics. To my left this week, returning to Clockwise, is a technology reporter from the Washington Post. It's Heather Kelly. Welcome back, Heather.
Thank you for having me again.
And to my left, it's, you know, just a software visionary. It's Guy English. Welcome back to the show, Guy.
I regret putting that on the form as a joke. Hi, it's great to be here.
All right, I'm going to kick things off this week. Apple has now simplified, and I've put that in scare quotes, its iPad lineup by mainly making the iPad Pro way more expensive. I'm kind of curious to know, when somebody comes to you, as I assume many of us are the people to whom others, our family and our friends, come to us and ask us, hey, what iPad should I buy? How do you think about recommending someone an iPad? Or do you? Do you tell them to just run far away? Heather, what is sort of your strategy for dealing with recommending these products?
I mean, I would say run far away, but I've used other tablets and the pain is not worth it. Oof, like an Amazon Fire tablet, it still makes me cry to think about. but I don't know that many people who need all of this. Like, I know simple people, you know, real salt of the earth people. They just want the dumbest possible iPad. Nobody's a pro. Like, that's a very niche market, I think. So I'm always like, get the cheapest one, get something refurbished, get something old. You're going to be watching TV and doing like the New York Times connection puzzle on it. Like, let's be real. So that's how I recommend iPads. Like, yeah, it should be an iPad, but no, it shouldn't be whatever is really expensive.
There's only one person in my life that asks me about iPads that I would go any other route than what Heather was talking about. Because yes, for most people, I am being asked typically because they want to get their child an iPad, and occasionally maybe want to get themselves one, but I trust that if they're coming to me asking about an iPad, they definitely want a tablet. And yes, like Heather said, I'm not going to point them to any other tablets. Let's be real. So the least expensive, which is now what, $329 or something like that, iPad is going to be the one that is great for them. However, the one person that I was mentioning, my grandma, she uses an iPad like she would a computer. So whatever would be the least expensive model that would provide her with the keyboard attachment would be the one that I would suggest to her. But yeah, almost everybody else is just that standard inexpensive iPad, unless, again, they said something about like, I really want one, but I just don't want it to be super big. Then I might push them toward the mini because that's one that I absolutely adore. Guy, what about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think if somebody is asking you what iPad they should buy, sort of by nature, they are tending towards the lower end of the experience. They don't have something that they want to do with it. They don't have a real definable need that may need the horsepower. So yeah, typically when I've been asked, it's been friends for their kids, and I've typically given them old iPads that I've got lying around from development stuff. Like if they age out of my development thing, I can give iPads. I'm not in that situation anymore. So if you're a friend of mine, don't ask. I'm fresh out of iPads. But yeah, typically the lower end kind of stuff. And I think that that's maybe a bit of a problem for Apple, and it has been for a while, is that like, I think people buy a new iPhone every year or two, but an iPad will last you like 5 years and then get handed down. And I think that that's maybe leveled the iPad out in a way that it's more similar to the way laptops work than the way iPhones work. In terms of the iPad Pros, I think if you have a need for such a device that can go and edit video in the field and all of that and do all of the fancy stuff that they show off in their incredibly well-produced videos, you tend to know it. I think it's, you know, more like people that would buy not a Mac Pro, but like a MacBook Pro. Why would they need that more than the, you know, just a regular MacBook Air or something? I think it's sort of a non-answer, but I think it's the truth, right? Like, I would be very hesitant to recommend somebody buy a massively, like a pro iPad for a bunch of money if they just weren't going to use it.
Well, I mean, if you, yeah. In my experience, if you tell somebody, oh, yeah, you can buy a great iPad for $1,000, they will look at you like you have two heads.
That's exactly
it. Yeah. I agree with what most of you are saying. I think, honestly, Apple's revamping of the lineup this week has made things a little easier to parse, because you do have that base level iPad that's now, you know, they got rid of the old one with the home button for most people. So like, that's pretty clear. Like, that's the iPad for most people in the same way that the Apple likes to say that the, you know, 13-inch MacBook Air is the best selling laptop it makes, right? Because it is the most consumer appeal one. And then everything narrows as you go up, because you get the iPad Air for, you know, people who are just like, feel like they want a little bit more, like Micah was talking about. His grandmother, my mom also uses her iPad for like most things and doesn't have a keyboard case right now. But if I were thinking about getting her, like upgrading for her the next time around, I would seriously consider her getting an iPad Air, just because she seems to use it for everything, and she'll get more out of the keyboard and stuff like that. And then the Pro is really kind of a, you know, I think, as you said, Guy, kind of a self-selecting market, really, which is if you need it, then you know you need it and you're in the market for that. I bought an iPad Pro 2 years ago, I guess. And it was because at the time the entry level was only like $50 more than upgrading the storage on an iPad Air. And I was like, well, but for $50, I get all these other features. And now it's like several hundred dollars. So I think if I went today, I would be tempted, because the iPad Pro has all the bells and whistles, but I just can't justify that $1,000 entry level. I will be fine with it. I will be fine with an iPad Air. I don't really need a Pro. It's just the coveting part. Thank you all for your thoughts on that. Let's go to our second topic, which comes from Heather.
Okay, this one's obviously a little personal. Does Apple still really need to be doing this, like these events? Could it just give us a press release? I mean, there's the like live stream starting at this time. The ones in person get me, because as you know, you go there to watch a pre-recorded video now. It all feels very, apologies, cringe. And also like a waste of a lot of our time. Just tell them, I mean, you're popular enough. Anyway, so my question is, like, can we just stop, please?
Well, I think you are onto something, because I've noticed that among the folks who are in some way paid to talk about this stuff, oh, like we do here on this podcast, there's a lot of conversation surrounding Apple's choices to, you know, show a video or not show a video, and whether, you know, people are there in person or not in person. And this time, pretty sure there was nobody like at the Apple Park Visitor Center or anything like that. And it was, yes, I think that we should consider ceasing with the events. I get it, because it's a captive audience. You've got eyes. People get excited. They, you know, maybe more people make a purchase. But at the same time, the idea that it's kind of, I don't know, not genuine, it feels a little bit odd, is, yeah, I'm with you there. And I kind of argued that right now at the end of the video, the last few times we've seen that the entire event has been shot on iPhone, and then we've seen edited on Mac, and this time it said edited on Mac and iPad. I said, come 2-3 years from now, instead of saying edited on iPad, it'll say generated on iPad, and that the whole thing will just be AI generated. And at that point, I think we just stop tuning in, or we send our AI bots to go summarize what the event is and move away. Guy, what are your thoughts?
I understand that it becomes de rigueur and sort of almost a hassle for technology people to sort of have to be expected to be waiting with bated breath to cover this kind of event, and like, you know, getting hassled by it. I think a part of it is that they enjoy the process, that that is sort of the release hatch for a lot of their energy. So I think there's an element of that, that I get the feeling they like making these videos and making them polished. They certainly don't need to polish it the way that they do, but they choose to. And I think the flip side of that coin is that they've been doing it this way for so long that if they stopped, I think the headlines would be, does Apple have faith in this particular iteration of the product? Why did they bury it without an event? Blah, blah, blah.
That's a good point.
But there's always, you know, there's always something for the rumor mill or, you know, some grist for that kind of weird perspective. But I think it's one of those things that is the train left the station and they're just going to keep going until there's a good reason to stop. I do think that the COVID pandemic has certainly changed it. Now we're getting these pre-recorded things, right, rather than bringing people out to Cupertino or events in New York or something. But yeah, I think maybe eventually it'll change up. But I do think that it's as much by habit now as anything.
I mean, here's the thing. Essentially, this has become... it's entertainment to a certain degree. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit like when you get those ads for like this is the best, is you get the ad for a trailer for a movie is coming. They're like, oh, on Wednesday, tune in to watch the trailer. It's like, so I'm getting an ad to watch an ad for a movie. That's probably mostly ad. No, I think the guys right at a certain point, they're trapped in this cycle of having this. The events as videos, on the one hand, it makes things easier. I'm sure Apple loves it because they can, as Guy said, they can polish it. They can have, there's no mistakes, right? Everything is flawless. They're not going to screw anything up. I was talking to my pal Lex Friedman about this on The Rebound this week, and his point was he kind of missed the live events because there is always the possibility of something going wrong, right? It's kind of entertaining to see people deal with that. I mean, it's purely entertainment, and it's not necessarily an indication of anything. But I think there's something missing from the pre-tape things. I compared it to like, when you see video game cutscenes and people are like, wow, but that's all pre-rendered and it's like watching a movie as opposed to seeing how gameplay works, right? Something that's an actual, like, what happens when you're trying to use this feature in the real world? Does it actually work? We can't even tell on a video because who knows if that's just all generated and, you know, rendered rather than something that is actually a feature working live. And in most cases, I think it probably is pre-rendered. So you lose a little bit of that excitement and spectacle around it. And at that point, I think there is an argument of why not just release as a press release or even release a video, just release it whenever. Like, I'm sure they like the cycle of getting people hyped up. But the downside to that is it gives time for people to spoil things, too. Right. Not to say the rumor mill won't be going. But, you know, I'm sure they loved this reveal about the M4 and to have Mark Gurman swoop in and reveal that like 2 weeks before the event. And to spoil their big surprise, that's kind of a bummer. So if you don't send out, you know, make a big hype out of all these things, maybe there's an argument for, you know, maintaining more secrecy as well. And there are some people, events like there were mini events in sort of New York and London this time, as Heather said, where you have to come watch the video, but you also got hands-on time and you got product demos and briefings and stuff like that. So for the press, that may still make sense, but it is certainly not what it once was. And I think it will continue to evolve. They're clearly playing around with it. They've done events in different places at different times with different levels of like people coming in or not. So I think they're trying to find a balance. But yeah, we're not quite there yet. Heather, any last thoughts?
Okay. So my hot take is, I think you pegged it. I miss chaos. I think I was sitting next to you, Dan, when like Steve Jobs yelled at everybody to close their computers and turn off their Wi-Fi. Yeah. Like, you don't get that anymore. And I also think that Tim Cook is running out of superlatives. So like, that's a limited resource. So obviously we see where I'm coming. I do think there should be one a year because that's kind of the only way I ever see Dan in person is like once every few years.
All right. Two topics down, two topics left to go, which of course means halftime here clockwise. And this week's episode is brought to you by Uni Pizza Ovens. Uni is the world's number one pizza oven company, letting you make restaurant quality pizza in your own home. Uni Pizza Ovens can reach up to 950 degrees Fahrenheit and cook pizza in as little as 60 seconds. This high temperature is what separates these pizzas you'll make in an Uni from those you can make in a conventional oven. And they're super quick to heat up. You'll be ready to go in only 20 minutes, which is just enough time to get all your toppings ready. Do you love an authentic wood-fired flavor? How about the convenience of cooking with gas? Well, whether you're looking to cook with wood, charcoal gas, or even electricity, there's an Uni oven that fits your needs and lifestyle. Uni designed ovens like the wood pellet fueled Fira 12 and the multi-fuel Caro 12G for maximum portability. It's made for those who like cooking on the go, camping, and getting out to the wilderness. But if you want both the convenience of gas but love the flavor of wood-fired cooking, Uni's Caro line has you covered because you can use wood or charcoal right out of the box or get the optional gas burner for cooking flexibility. And now with Uni's electric Volt 12 pizza oven, you can make pizza both indoors and outdoors. Uni ovens are also for more than just pizza. You can cook juicy burgers, sizzling fajitas, buffalo wings, and so much more. Uni pizza ovens start from just $2.99 with free shipping to the US, UK, and EU. And they also make cast iron cookware, pizza peels, thermometers, and loads of other accessories to help you level up your cooking. Uni was nice enough to send me one of these pizza ovens, and I've been using it to make pizza. And you know what? The pizza's really good. I really like getting like hot, fresh pizza, and like I like delivery pizza, but it's always cold by the time it gets to my house. So being able to cook it in relatively quickly, I mean, once you put it in, it's like a minute or two before these things are done. And I trust me, I know because I'm still working on my pizza peel technique to avoid burning the pizza. But I have to say, every pizza I have made with this has been better than the last one. And all of them were better than any pizza I ever made in just my standard oven. So I cannot recommend it highly enough. And listeners of this show can get 10% off their purchase of an Uni pizza oven. Just go to uni.com and use the code clockwise2024 at checkout. Uni pizza ovens are the best way to bring restaurant quality pizza to your home. So go to ooni.com and use the code clockwise2024 for 10% off. Our thanks to Uni pizza ovens for their support of this show. All right, halftime is over. Micah, what do you got for us?
All right. This is not about the Apple event, but is a question I'm curious to hear an answer from all of you. If you could create a perfectly functioning chatbot, and by that I mean you don't have to worry about hallucinations, otherwise known as making stuff up. If you could create a perfectly functioning chatbot that's good at one thing, like one single task, one single subject, one single skill, what would your chatbot do, or what would it help you with? Guy, let's start with you.
This one's a little out there, kind of literally. I watched a PBS documentary a couple of nights ago, but it was about a long-term mission to Mars and the sort of psychological experiments that they've run in the in desert facilities and that kind of thing. And one of them had a floating round head with an animated face on it that purported to be an AI to talk to him about how he was feeling and how he was doing. This was up in the space station, so it was literally floating around. It was wild and kind of janky. Like it felt like it was using 1990s style AI, like rather than, you know, it's basically Eliza chatbot and a floating head rather than sort of a more modern one. I don't know how you would achieve that kind of level, but some sort of artificial entity kind of thing that would be able to gauge the aspects, help manage the aspects of long-term isolation. Because, you know, that's not just an issue in space. It's an issue for a lot of people. And yeah. I don't mean it like an AI, like it becomes your best friend kind of thing, but some kind of pseudo-counselor. Not that they can give you any real counselor help, but something to talk to. Diaries used to be that, and that's sort of fallen out of the way. But some sort of supportive feedback mechanism, which, as I say it, I realize it feels very dehumanizing, but ultimately I kind of would like it to be a humanizing and encouraging tool to help talk to other people and to alleviate some of your fears more than a replacement for human contact. That's a tricky line that I'm trying to draw, but I think that that's a valid use case for this kind of technology.
I like the guy went super highbrow because my first thought was a chatbot that helps me plan the perfect heist.
Okay, no illegal stuff, Dan.
I just planning. No, I didn't say executing the perfect heist. That's on me. I thought about this, and the first thing that came to mind is actually something that we're kind of close to, although with non-machine learning stuff, which is translation. I think it would be cool, though, because I think what a lot of those translators fall down on is things like idioms and colloquialisms. There are so many expressions and phrases and even just like usage of language that is not really translatable. Even if you can kind of like put it into words, you can't really get the sense of it. And I think it's very hard when you're trying to learn a language to get to a point where you can actually use it like fluently, like a person who, you know, lives in a region where that language is used, or a primary speaker of that language. And so having something, you know, kind of like a souped up Duolingo, but like, a bot that you could talk to and practice your foreign language skills, and to the point where it is more like being immersed in that language, I think would be really cool and interesting. Because I love I love languages and I love learning languages, but it is tricky. Like, you kind of top out at a certain point unless you're like, I've got 6 weeks to go live in a small village in France and really learn my French. And so having something where it can kind of more flexibly figure out all the usages of languages and help you learn all the things that you're not going to learn, you know, just by doing sort of rote memorization, I think would be really cool. So yeah, I want a foreign language practice chatbot to be my best friend and help me plan heists. Heather, what about you?
I would like a chatbot that knows how to love. But beyond that, two things. One, I want a lawyer. I can't afford a lawyer. I'm not like in the lawyer tax bracket, but I feel like sometimes I would like a lawyer, and that's what I would like a chatbot to do for me. Just help me with my petty grievances, write angry letters, you know, make people scared of me. And then number two, I would really be interested in seeing where they go sort of for medical diagnosis. Because I'm a one medical person out of, I don't know why, man, I just am. Anyways, but like, you get this limited amount of time and you're charged on the amount of time, and it's just very common to not like feel listened to and confused, and you're like, are you really here with me? And I feel like a chatbot would be infinitely patient and really help a lot of people out, and not necessarily replace doctors, but just maybe keep some of us from dying as soon. So those are my three things: love, medical care, and an angry lawyer.
We should all have those.
I love that. There's a company, a startup that I interviewed the CEO of that company, and they are working on that lawyer one especially. The bots will write letters to reduce your bills in some cases, will help with any kinds of those like standard form legalese. And I think that's a brilliant place because, as you said, not all of us have access to lawyers. So democratizing access to that would be great. For me, I want a pedagogy chatbot, meaning I want a chatbot that knows the best way to learn a given thing. So I could say, hey, I really want to take up carpentry. Teach me the way that I can best learn how to become a carpenter, or, you know, specifically make a table. And then something like, hey, have to say, my elementary geography class really let me down, and I can't quite place all of the 50 states and the capitals in a blank map. What's the best way to learn how to do that? Something that can say, you know, oh, well, obviously you should do that song that has all the states, or the way to do that is over the next, you know, 14 days, you should work with a blank state map, and that would be so cool. So that's the chatbot that I wish I had, because I think it would kind of be a cheat code to learning. All right. Thank you all for your interesting answers on that. Hopefully there's some person listening who's going to create all of those bots for us, and they will be perfectly functioning and never have issues. Guy, why don't you tell us your topic?
Well, following up on the Apple event, the thing I was most intrigued by was this new pencil. Why the lineup is like that, I leave to you guys to work out, because that is a lot of pencils. But the new pencil particularly has a whole bunch of cool new features like barrel roll and some other more haptic features. Does anybody here use a pencil? And is that a compelling argument for the iPad, like the more pro lineup, like sort of how we started the show?
It's funny. I have an Apple Pencil second gen in my hand right now. I don't think it's charged. It's a great fidgety thing that I have on my desk. I like the pencil. It's a really impressive piece of technology. I loved the part of the event where they zoom through like the interior. There is so much stuff in there. It's super cool how much they cram into it. I have like very little usage for it. I bought it mainly as sort of a novelty slash thing to test. And I like using it occasionally just even as just a pointer on the iPad. But I have very little artistic talent, and my handwriting is awful. So between those two things, there is not a really good reason for me to use it on my iPad basically ever. I go through periods where I always have it like clipped to the top of the iPad, and then I'll, you know, pull it off and sort of poke at my screen with it. And then I have periods where I take it off because I'm traveling or something and I don't want to lose it, and I leave it on my desk and it just sits there for weeks and loses its charge. So as cool as everything is, it definitely feels like one of those tools that is the nichiest of niche tools, because I imagine there's a lot of use for it in the cases where people, you know, are doing artwork or effects or whatever. But like, I feel like it tapers off pretty quickly after that, much like a pencil. And so I think that, you know, it's super cool, and I'm glad they continue to innovate on it and that they continue to add stuff. And I'm sure there are a lot of artists who really appreciate it, but I do think it's something that is probably not for me, and maybe not for most iPad users. Heather?
Okay, so I have one, right? And my kids just like to stick it to different metal objects, and then I can never find it. There's also never a use for it. I'm a pen girly. Like, I love a good pen. Give me like a Bic G2 and some paper. I'm so happy. I like the feeling of it. Apple Pencils, do not call to me. This is just something that may only bug me, though. They were showing off how thin the iPad is by saying, look, it's smaller than the pencil. I don't want it smaller than the pencil. I want them the same size. Like, oh, it just gives me the wiggles and I can't really peg why. I also respect that it is a marvelous feat of engineering, but I'm going to be over here with my box of literal pens. I'm sorry, Apple. Also, what does it cost? What, does it have like a little standalone price? Because I can't afford it.
It's $129.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Yeah. I'm good.
A box of number twos will cost you a lot less than that.
We'll just move that decimal over a couple points.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got an Apple Pencil as well, and I very rarely use it. I love the idea, but in practice, I do have good handwriting. I am also not a very talented artist, if at all. And so because of that, yeah, I don't find myself using the Apple Pencil all that often. Occasionally, speaking of carpentry, I do use it when I'm sort of sketching out some plans that I might be doing, but it's just so rare that that comes up that if my work was not buying the Apple Pencil, I would not have gotten the Apple Pencil in the first place. Certainly not an accessory I would purchase for myself, because I simply do not need it. Guy, why don't you round us out here?
I like it. I love the idea of it. Like you, I wish that I had more use for it. I'm fascinated by the technology side of it. The notion of like cheap wireless ubiquitous sensors mixed with some of the inference that this AI stuff can do, I think opens up a whole bunch of new software possibilities. Is it a product worth buying now? No, like not unless you do a lot of drawing and all of that. But I am sort of fascinated by the direction that this stuff is going. That's a bit of a non-answer, maybe. I'm excited by it and the possibilities of it, while recognizing that it's still a pretty limited, use day to day. And besides, like I keep, Amanda's daughter keeps losing our Apple Pencil in the couch. And then the cats run away with it. And it's like, that's an expensive cat toy. So, you know.
The new ones have Find My, so you're all set.
I was very excited about that. Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, I think it's an awesome gadget. I don't particularly have a huge amount of use for it outside of my work. But I am encouraged and fascinated by the progress of this kind of ancillary device.
All right, that's four topics down. We just have time for a bonus topic really quick. I'll also remind you that we have lots of Clockwise merch for sale at clockwise.social, including tote bags, new tote bags to go with our hats and shirts and phone cases. You can, or just wear one of each, actually, is kind of the ideal. I don't know where you wear a tote bag, but one of each, that'd be great. All right, bonus topic for you real quick. Beach or mountains, Heather?
Insane question. Beach, better rocks.
Mountains.
Lex Luthor style beachfront property in the mountains.
Lex Luthor style mountain villain lair. I think I have to go mountains because, not unlike Anakin Skywalker, I hate sand. Hey, if you'd like to get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. Just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for just $7 per month or $7 a year, and you'll help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss aspirational purchasing decisions. All right, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. All that remains is for us to thank our fantastic guests. Heather Kelly, thank you so much for joining us once again.
I loved it. This was amazing. 5 stars.
And Guy English, thank you so much for being here.
That was a lot of fun. 6 stars.
Whoa, wow. Star inflation's happening. Thank you, everybody out there listening. Micah will be back next week, but until then, we remind everyone, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.